because in the Brahminical sense, or the kind of Vedic background that was the spiritual landscape of the Buddha's time, that sense of a Brahman as an ultimate reality, a sort of supreme being, supreme quality, was kind of an eternalist approach to the teaching. So then this languaging of letting go of all kinds of being, all kinds of identification, it can come across as nihilistic or life-negating. And so even though there's this massively comprehensive description by the Buddha, too, if it was indeed Brahmin priests, people who would have been quite skilled with knowledge and language and having a comprehensive spiritual background, even though he took great pains to explain in extraordinary detail, still it's like, don't like it, don't want it. To me also, why I feel it is significant in terms of editorial gesture is that to me it represents a strength of the Pali canon, that it's not all sort of glamorized, that everything the Buddha was said was always rejoiced in and had this sort of fantastic results of, you know, dozens of thousands of beings being enlightened every time he spoke. But not only did that happen once in a while, but they put that like the first talk in the whole collection. And so it's a very human touch to me. It has a very realistic ring to it that says, yeah, like it could well have been that way. And also to represent the field of exposition that the Buddha was working in, that people would gather around and he would teach, but it wasn't always the case that people understood or appreciated or were liberated from what he had to say. So it's representing a very kind of human landscape that the Buddha was teaching in. I can't really be sure about that guess about why they would have put that first, but it is kind of significant because that doesn't happen that often, that, you know, there's a disapproval of the Buddha's teaching. Sometimes people hear and they don't understand or they don't develop any insight. Hearing the Buddha giving a Dhamma talk, and to be his own disciples hearing him give a Dhamma talk and not approving, is unusual. And the choice to put that first in the Majjhima Nikaya, there must have been some reason for it. And I think that's a way of representing the field of the teaching in a very realistic, accurate, and human way is, at least I feel that's the result of it. Whether that was the intention of the compilers, I can't say. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Those are good thoughts. Yeah, I mean, it stands out. Certainly that sense of, there are a few suttas where they don't like it. to begin the whole collection is really kind of a statement. It's a, kind of clarifying what the purpose of the Majjhima Nikaya really is, I think, is establishing a bright view.
Mm-hmm.
So,
also the
speculation on our part.
And also in terms of the common spiritual languaging of things like being one with everything or becoming one with the universe, these kind of ways people express themselves nowadays and in the Buddha's time as well, I feel this is really helpful to have it spelled out with this sort of they perceive the all as the all and they conceive themselves in all as part of all, to be themselves in the all and so forth and saying, nope, nope, nope. So I feel that's a helpful perspective on that kind of, particularly the sort of New Agey expression.
Which is not so new.
Yeah, old New Age, yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps the bhikkhus did not delight because they understood that delight is the root of all dukkha.
It could be the case, yes. Yes, good point, good point. Yes.
Something similar was talking about the danger of being delighted and they were not delighted at the end.
Yeah, it's just what Eleonora was saying. Well, yeah, I don't think that's quite what's meant, but it's no. It's a
is it the same word in the Pali? Is still the Nandi root?
I'd have to look that up. I looked up the expression when it says delight is the root of all suffering. I didn't look at the denouement, the last line of the sutta, but I'll check that out. They were diligently following his teaching. No delight, no delight. No sadhu, no sadhu. Yeah.
Is there speculation or understanding? What's the nature of their disapproval?
In the commentary, there's no mention of who the bhikkhus were in the actual sutta. The commentary says they were former Brahmin priests, and the understanding is because it went against the kind of eternalist views that the root of the Brahminical doctrine, that, again, it's a very, very basic idea within the Vedas, is that the Atman is what we would call in Western language, the soul, the kind of the essence of selfhood that has got separated from Brahman. And the spiritual journey is the Atman trying to get reunited with Brahman, and that will be ultimate bliss. It's quite an eternalist, self-based framework, a spiritual framework. And so that was kind of the landscape that the Buddha was speaking to. And then the counterpoint was those who sort of negated that, who were nihilists, or who talked about a negation of karma, negation of cause and effect and such like. I mean, there's a number of different philosophies that were around at the Buddha's time that are described in some detail in the suttas, but I think the most common view was that sort of eternalist view of wanting to be subsumed into some kind of glorious reality and to be me in a blissful state for eternity.